we find in the Gemara that Hillel was Mesakin Apruzbul. And the Gemara says that the reason that Hillel was Mesakin Apruzbul was because he saw that when he came before Shviyus, Shemitah year, so people were reluctant to lend money because they were afraid that Shviyus is going to be Meshamet and they're not going to be able to get their money back. So obviously we see that the situation in that door somehow changed. Before that time, there was no need to have a prosbul. It was only in that time, in that period of time, in the life of Hillel, that it was necessary to have a prosbul. And we can easily understand this, Kedem Kol, because of the tremendous taxes that were levied on the people by the Romans. So there was a pressure on the people that they had to come up with a certain amount of money. So under normal circumstances, a person could lend out his money because he can always do with less. He'll eat less, he'll live with less. But when it came to paying off a person's taxes and he had to come up with a certain amount of money, so you can't prove in such a situation that you're going to be a mistopic b'muot. You can't be a mistopic b'muot. You've got to come up with the money. So this added a tremendous pressure on the tzibur. And obviously, it was also a sign of a decline in the dor, because in previous generations, if they would have had such pressures, they would have had bitachin, and they wouldn't have been as fearful that it should stop them from being mekayim, the mitzvah of Kes of Talva. Hillel saw that there were these two things coming together, Yeridus HaDairis, and the fact that they were under tremendous financial pressure. So therefore he was Mesakin Apruzbul, which was a way of going through a technicality that the halacha of Shemitah should not apply to a person who is giving out a loan. Another thing that took place in the time of Hillel and Shammai, besides the different takonas that they made, was the fact that in their time they started to be Mesader the Mishnah. What this means is as follows. We explained previously that in the time of the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, they already started to be Mesader the Mishnayos. Thus haste, there we always had, of course, Teresh Shabal Peh, but it never was formalized with exact statements on Teresh Shabal Peh. Now, in the time of the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, so they started formalizing with exact statements and structuring these exact statements, that through these statements, a person will always be able to know and they should be able to come to Teru Shabal Peh. And as we go along, perhaps this will become clearer and easily understood. We see that although Shammai and Hillel started the Seder of the Mishnayos, but it's very clear in the Mishnayos that they were already Mishnayos before Shammai and Hillel. For instance, we have the Mishnah in Psochem and Beis Amid Aleph, Mishnah, Or La'aba also, Boitkines HaChomis La'or HaNer. And then the Mishnah says, U'bameh Omru Bei Shureis B'marseich Mokim Shmachnisem Bei Chomis. What do we mean when we say that two rows in the storage place where you store the wine, Mokim Shmachnisem Bei Chomis, that in the place where you have Bei Shureis of the barrels, that you're mechuyev to be boidik for chametz? What does this mean? Shammai oimrim beishuris al pnei kol ha-masif, ubeisilol oimrim shteishuris achitzaynais sheheim ho'el yoimis. So we have a statement that beishuris b'masif mokish machinisim b'chametz, and we have a machloikis beishammai and beisilol. What does that statement mean? Now, who said the first statement? They're going to explain a statement of Beishuris B'Marsik Mokesh Machnisim B'Chomitz. Who made that statement? Who made the statement that they're coming now to clarify? And the answer is that that statement was made in the previous generations, in the time of the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, and until sometime in the Tkufa before Shammai and Hillel, and that statement was known by everybody, and now it became an issue of exactly what does that statement mean. That's also what it means when you find often the Gemara talks about Mishnah Rishayna, Mishnah Achrayna. There were older Mishnayos, in other words, statements that were given over from the previous generations, and then there were statements that were made in the later generations. And the statements that were all made, they were made in order that a person should understand, should be able to understand all, or come to all of Torah Shebaal Peh through these statements. And it was done very, very much b'kitzer. It was done b'kitzer because Kaidim Kol Dvorim Shebaal Peh, so even though at this point they didn't write them down, so it wasn't an issue of that you can't write it down, but they knew that this would all have to be committed to memory. And not only committed to memory, but it had to be committed to memory with a nation of people that are not always going to be able to sit down calmly and comfortably in a Beis HaMedrash and learn the halachas and go through in memory with the calm recollection of exactly what the halachas were. Because, as we mentioned previously, the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah understood that this is not going to be an easy tkufa. It's going to be a stormy tkufa. The less that the people had to memorize, so the easier time they would have in recalling all that they needed to recall. The statements of the Mishnayos didn't explain Torah Shebaal Peh. The example we can give is, I guess, like a telegraph. It was like short, curt statements. And from these statements, if one would think about the statements that were made, he'd be able to understand all the different halachas that are hinted to in the statements. These statements, which were now very much b'kitzer, so Yidden would be able to take these statements with them when they went to hide out in the caves, and they'd have an easier time reminding themselves of these statements under all circumstances. I guess one of the best mashal that we can give is we have a principle that's negeya in all of Hilchas Mammon, Ein Hochim B'Mammon Achar HaRoiv, that when it comes to Mammonistika Halachas, you don't go according to the Roiv. Roiv is not a way of deciding issues of Mammon, issues of monetary issues. Now there is no Mishnah that tells us this Halacha of Ein Hochim Mammon Achar HaRoiv. The Mishnah that tells us this is the Mishnah in Perek HaMeiniach, where it uses the Lashon of Kad, and then afterwards it switches to a Lashon of Chavius, describing a halacha that has to do with a person damaging, falling over, tripping over a Kad and a Chavius, and a person who wants to buy a Kad. And then and afterwards the question is, if he wants to buy a kad, does he mean a smaller pitcher, or does he mean a chavius, which is a larger pitcher? Exactly what does he mean? And the Mishnah switches one time using a kad and one time using a chavius. And the chiddush of this Mishnah is, Ein hochim amaman achar aroiv. One of the things, I mean, that's not what the Mishnah is about, but due to the fact that the Mishnah changes the Lashon from Kad to Chavius, we're able to derive from this Mishnah, by virtue of the fact that the language is changed from Kad to Chavius, this principle, which is an important principle in all of Hilchas Mammonis, that Ein Hochim Mammon Achar HaRoiv. So, we see that the Chachamim, they, so to say, they buried important principles in innocent-looking statements, because the statement because they memorized these statements, and then they took out these statements. Now they took out the statements by just repeating the statements, and then they were able to analyze the statements that they knew and from there derive all of the different halachas that were hinted to in these statements. So these were ingenious statements that were made so that a person should be able to learn all different types of halachas from these statements. That's what the Mishnayos were about. So once again, like we find here in the Mishnah in Psachim, at times there became disagreements exactly in the Pratim and the Prati Pratim, what these statements were telling us. And that's how Machloikis happened binageya to the Mishnah Rishayna that we have, binageya to a previously learned Mishnah. The whole system of codifying the Mishnayos, when Hillel and Shammai came onto the scene, so they started collecting all of the Mishnayos that were learned. And they started taking these Mishnayos and these statements that were learned and choosing from them the statements that were the clearest and the most precise, and rejecting the statements that they felt were not as clear and as precise. They also collated these statements, putting them into different categories, into what we now have, the Shisha Sidrei Mishnah, and in the Shisha Sidrei Mishnah, the different Masechtas, breaking them down according to different subjects. We have, first of all, the master subject, all of Mamanis, and then afterwards down to different Masechtas and different Prokim. And so they started codifying all of these Mishnayos. This job was a tremendous job, and it was finished in the time of Rabbeinu HaKodesh, which was 180 years later, many, many years after the Churban, and it took a long time gathering everything together, partially because of the tremendous work that it was involved, and partially because from this point until then, the Eden still had to go through many, many tzaras, including the tzara of the Churban of the second Beis HaMikdash and the Churban Beitar, which we'll yet discuss. So a lot is going to go on in the next 180 years, but in those 180 years, Chazal were preparing us for this Golus that we're in today, so that now a person could take with him the Mishnayos with him. Ultimately, it wasn't enough just to codify the Mishnayos and to choose the most precise Mishnayos. But in the time of Rabbeinu HaKadosh, they found the necessary portion to write them down in order to make sure they wouldn't be forgotten. But at this point, in the time of Hillel and Shammai, so now these Mishnayos, once again, we see this beginning with Hillel and Shammai, and the example we're giving is the Mishnah in Pesachim. Here we see how the collection of the Mishnayos began. The truth is that it's fascinating, because you see that in the machloikism that there are in the Mishnayos, basically there's no argument b'negeya to the general statements that are made. For instance, let's go back again to this Mishnah in Pesachim, that there is a din of bedikas chometz. Everybody agrees there's a din of bedikas chometz. And when is bedikas chometz? Everybody agrees there's no. So everybody agreed that there was a mitzvah, there was a takon of bedikas chometz. And everybody agreed when the mitzvah of bedikas chometz took place. The machloikis came out in a technicality, b'negeya, so we could say like a prat, and even a prat of a prat, of b'negeya, to where, if you where in a marsafe, where in a storage place, where you have wine, where you have to be baited. And the same thing we see in all of the Mishnayos. There isn't a machloikis b'negeya to the halacha of muksa. Everybody agrees there's a halacha of muksa. When you get down to the protim and the protiprotim of muksa, so that's when you have machloikis. The only really basic machloikis that we have in the time of Shammai and Hillel was the machloikis of Tzoras Habas, which is an issue in itself. But otherwise, what we see b'negeya to the machloikisin is that the machloikisin once again that took place were machloikis in the protim. But the Torah Sheba'al Peh, the basic Torah Sheba'al Peh, so that was muskim l'divrei hakol b'negeya to the all of the halachas that we have. We also see, we could see from the Mishnayos, that besides Shammai and Hillel, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, so there were many, many other Chachamim that were living in Eretz Yisrael. Because although we know that usually when there's a Machlokes Shammai and Hillel, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, we paskin like Beis Hillel, but we also see at times in the Mishnayos that we don't paskin not like Shammai and not like Hillel. For instance, the negeya to the halacha of how much water passes a mikveh. So there's a machlekes Shammai and Hillel, and the Gemara says the chachamim aimim like the brezer, the like the brezer. But gimel lugim, they had a meseira that gimel lugim passel a mikveh. So Lavdafka was always the way Shammai or Hillel said either. There were other chachamim, and if the other chachamim were the roiv, so then that's the way, that is the mahalach that the psak came about. And later on we'll discuss how the ultimate psak came out, the negeya to the machlekes that we had between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, which took place many generations, or I should say a couple of generations later. We also, by looking at the Mishnayos, we get a glimpse. In the Mishnah Rishonis and the Mishnah Achronis, we get a glimpse, a little bit, of to what type of the madrega, so to say, of the generation that existed in that time. And once again, understanding the Fatzoret generation, so to say, living in the time of Hordes, living under the yoke of the Romans, with the tzoros that they were giving us, and yet we see the level, the madregis of Klal Yisrael, a little bit of a glimpse. The Mishnah in Yevamis, Daf Lamed Tes Amud Beis, when there's a shaila of should a person be miyavim, which is better, to make yibum or to make chalitza. So the Mishnayos say that now we have to make chalitza, according to one sheet in the Mishnah, which the way we paskin, we make chalitza, because yibum is only if a person is miyavim l'shem shemayim, l'shem mitzvah. But if you're not miyavim l'shem mitzvah, so then it's like an erva, it has a din of an eshesach, which is an erva. So in the previous generation, they say, which is in the time of Shammai and Hillel, so then they were able to make yibum, because people did things l'shem shemayim. Shenkin, in the later generations, when people weren't so much committed to do things l'shem shemayim, so then we have to make chalitza and we can't make yibum. And this is a generation, when we talk about people that were able to miyavim in ganzim l'shem shemayim, this was people who were living between the Romans that didn't have a shemetz of any type of morality whatsoever. And here we have people that were able to be mekayim azad in mitzvah of yibum l'shem shemayim. The Gemara in Gittin, Daf Pei Aleph Amud Aleph, talks about the difference between Doris Rishonim and Doris Achronim. Doris Rishonim is the Dor of Shammai and Hillel, that the halacha is if a person brings his tefuah into the bayis through the door of the bayis, so then it becomes tevel, and it's mechuyev meiser. If you bring it in through the window, so then you potter from meiser. So like Doris Rishonim, then they used to bring it into their house through the door in order to become mechuyev in meiser. No, now the Doris Achronim, they're looking for ways to circumvent the halacha, to make it so that they shouldn't become mechuyev. So the level of l'shem shemayim in the door of der fatzorah, the door from Hillel and Shammai was such a tremendous level. We have statements that we have in the Mishnayos that tell us about the type of people, even when it came to monetary issues. For instance, the Mishnah says, "Ein adam teveya elam ken yeshli." You're not going to go to ask to collect money from somebody else unless it must be, you know, you're not going to say an outright lie. And if you go to somebody and you say that he owes you $100, well, something is going on. Even assuming that the man is a liar, but something is going on. We have another statement. Ein adam chayta v'loy loy. If a person has a choice of doing an aveira and doing something that's not an aveira, so a person is not going to just do an aveira. You can have it that a person, you know, if he has a benefit out of doing the aveira, so he'll do the aveira. But if a person has no benefit from the aveira, unheard of, impossible that such a person would do an aveira. If you could do it in a mutadika way, in an asdika way, no yid would ever do something in an asadika way. That was the level of the people. We have ein adam meiz ponav b'vnei bal chayvei. Nobody would have the audacity, you say the brazenness, to stand in front of somebody that lent you $100 and lie straight into his face and say to him, I don't owe you any money. Ein adam, he did you a favor. He lent you money, you would never have the audacity to look him into the face and to say to him that you don't owe him any money. This was the type of people that lived in that time. We all know the Yerushalmi, that the Yerushalmi says that we have a chazokah, even about an Am Ha'aretz, that he's not going to lie when it comes on Shabbos. Shabbos, even the biggest Amoritz, he's not going to say a lie. What does that mean? It's a Shabbos, it's a Kedusha Shabbos. Everybody understands that now that it's Shabbos, so you have to be careful what you say. There's no special issur of saying a sheker on Shabbos than saying any other time a sheker. It's just that when it came Shabbos, everybody was elevated. Even Amoritz, he was elevated into a whole different realm and a whole different world, and therefore that an Amoritz should say a sheker on Shabbos can't be. No such thing. Another statement you have, a Gemara in Megillah, that the Gemara says that, again, we're talking about Amoratzim, afilu reikim shebehem, oisim mitzvahs kerimayin, that even the simplest person in Klal Yisrael is full of mitzvahs, like the amount of pits that you have in a pomegranate, and this is of course a marshal, that pomegranate is full of pits, you bite into it, it's full of pits. So the same way when you have, and even the simplest person, but the amount of mitzvahs that even the simplest person does, so it's the only marshal that we can give is the marshal of the remain. So this was the insight we have from the Mishnais about the level of even the typical person that came to within Torah, and because of the level of his level of Kedusha, so to say, this had a bearing in how we're going to go around dealing with within Torah. A lot of these rules never don't hold true anymore when coming into within Torah. They just don't hold true anymore because just people are not the same. We can well understand then, and as we mentioned before, that if Klal Yisrael was living amongst the Romans, and this is the type of people that they were, this was their level of honesty, even to the simplest people. This was their level of morality, even to the simplest person. This was their level, and shown by the mitzvah of Yibum. And when it came to honesty, shown by all these different principles that we have, the Negeya to Mominis that we just mentioned. And this was their dedication to being Mekayim Mitzvahs, living a life that was on a higher level, that they wanted to be Mekayim Mitzvahs. As we mentioned, that they went out of their way, so to say, to see to it that they should be Mekayim, the mitzvahs of Meiser. And again, this is just a mashal. So surely the same thing would be Negeya to other kinds of mitzvahs. So it's no wonder that in that period of time, we find many people that became Gerim. Even in the secular historians, they talk about the fact that in the Roman Empire, 15-20% of the people were Jewish. And the reason had to do partially because of the fact that there were many Gerim, people that were Megayer in the Roman Empire. And it's a Pella. it's really an unbelievable situation, because to be a Yid, matched up against the Romans, so what was good about being a Yid? The wealth was by the Romans, and the comfort was by the Romans, the strength was by the Romans, the army was by the Romans, the fear and poverty, they were found amongst the Yidden. So how was it that there was an influence from Klal Yisrael even onto the Goyim, that you have so many people who are Megayer? The example we have is the Geirim that came to Hillel to be Megayer, and we have other examples in the Gemara, but we also, this is mentioned even in the secular books, that a phenomenon, people decided to become Geirim. So the way to answer this question is, first of all, that, as we mentioned all the way back, that this was after the bittul of the Yetzer Hara of Avodah Zarah, and all over people were searching for something to believe in, and they were searching for meaning in their lives. As a result of that, there was a spread of many different beliefs that came together in different places of the world, as we explained, that this is what was going on in Alexandria, and this was going on throughout the Roman Empire, and people were searching and looking, adopting different religions that they felt was the proper religion. And now we come to the final step, that if you had, at this, I guess, what we would call an able agoy, sagoy that appreciated, we would say, the finer things in life, and he would look and compare the life of the Romans to the life of Lahavdul Elif Avdolis of the Eden. And even perhaps if you had a Roman, somebody in the Roman Empire, he wasn't so bad, but he wasn't so bad because he couldn't afford to be so bad. He wasn't so bad because he wasn't accepted into higher society, but he would have loved to be so bad. He had no idealism in his life whatsoever. His life consisted of every type of a pleasure in the world that he could possibly digest. His life consisted of pleasure from doing cruelty to other people. There was no idealism at all. As we mentioned, as the Romans went from country to country, conquering different countries, so they adopted the so-called gods of the different countries, and they added it on to their repertoire of the many gods that they supposedly believed in, which obviously was ridiculous, that not just they didn't believe in those, but obviously they didn't believe in any of them. And it was just a cultural kind of an issue. It was something that was a ceremonial kind of a thing. And it sort of added to the color of their civilization. But there was no idealism that was found in the Roman Empire. There was, between even the most successful of the people, as soon as somebody became successful, so the others became jealous, and a dagger into the ribs was a common occurrence that took place from time to time. They all knew this. They knew what it was all about. They knew the pleasure of the Romans. So if you had a so-called Edelus Art Goy, who saw, in the middle of this reign of terror, and this reign of pleasure that was all around them, and you saw there people living, and living a life of honesty, a life of idealism, a life of morality. It perhaps, you know, it's like when you're in darkness, so even the smallest candle gives off a very strong light. And so perhaps this is what was going on, and this is what impressed those people that were impressed when they saw what was going on in this nation that was being oppressed by the Romans all around them, and being oppressed by the Hordes, and all of that he tried to do, and yet they were able to lead a life of Kedusha, the Tyra, and they saw that it was their belief in the Torah that kept them going. They believed in the Torah and the Messiah of the Torah, and somehow the Torah was able to keep them, that they should be able to lead normal life. Life, of course, more than just simple normal life, but even to them looking in from the outside, this was an island in the middle of the storm. So for such a person who was able to appreciate something like this, so this was for them a draw, and they were, as a result, drawn into Yiddishkeit. And perhaps as we go on, we'll discuss this a little bit more as we continue. The one thing that we need to mention is the one good thing that came out of Hordes. And this that came out of Hordes, this good thing that came out of Hordes, could be seen even today. Hordes, as he mentioned, was a tremendous builder. He went all around Eretz Yisrael, built up different cities, and everything that he built, the different palaces that he built and the Colosseums that he even built around Eretz Yisrael, he did all in order to impress the Romans, because basically that's what he was about. His only real concern was to impress the Romans. But there was one time that he wanted to do something for the Yidden. And this took place in the Gemara in Baba Basra, tells us over the story about how this came about. Gemara says that Hordes one time heard that that this halacha, that the only person that can be a king amongst the Eden is Mikerev, the Gemara Darshan's Mikerev Achecho Tosim Alecho Melech, which means that the only one that could be a king is somebody who himself is a Yid. If he himself is a Yid, so then he's allowed to be a king. Now, Hordes realized that this disqualifies him. He, Betzim, was not allowed to be a king. And he went around saying, who's the one that teaches this halacha, that in order to be a king, the only one that could be a king is somebody who's a Yid? So they told him, the Chachamim, they're the ones who teach this halacha. Once again, he never really went to pinpoint the Chachamim in order to do some damage bedafka to the Chachamim. But here in this case, he thought that the Chachamim were darshaning this halacha in order to single him out. Or this is a case where it literally affected him directly. And so therefore, he went and he killed out the Chachamim. And the only one, the Gemara says, he allowed one of the Chachamim to survive, and this was Bava ben Buta. Bava ben Buta, he allowed him to survive because he was an advisor of his. And we can well imagine that a person like Hordes didn't have too many advisors that he could trust, because if a person is a person that's such an underhanded, cruel person, you always have to be afraid that the advice that you're getting from somebody is, he's not really honest about his advice, but he's doing it to take nekama from you. So Bava ben Buta, he knew that he was an honest person. So he allowed Bava ben Buta to live. But something happened, and all of a sudden, also it says that even though he allowed him to survive, but he made sure to blind him and to make sure that he should live a fatzaret asart life. Well, with this all, Hordes still was always afraid that perhaps Bava ben Buta was a person that was looking to do him harm. So he came upon a plot. He went to Bava ben Buta and he disguised his voice as a different person, not himself, and he tried to get Bava ben Buta to curse him, to curse Hordes. He sort of led him on that isn't this Hordes a terrible person, and so forth and so on, and he tried to get Bava ben Buta to agree with him that Hordes was a terrible person and to curse him. But he couldn't get him to do it. Bava ben Buta, I guess he was a step ahead, and he couldn't get Bava ben Buta to say something against Hurdis. So, after trying and trying, he finally, Hurdis, revealed his identity to Bava ben Buta, and he told him that it's me, and he says, if I would have realized how wise you chachomim are, that you were careful not to say anything against me, even though you didn't know who I was, so I have a new respect, not just for Bava ben Buta, but a new respect for the chachomim, and he felt bad that he killed out the chachom. So he said to Bava ben Buta, what should I do in order to compensate for the fact that he had killed out the chacham? Bava ben Buta told him that you killed out the chachamim that are considered the einayim of Klal Yisrael. So what you should do, the Beis HaMikdash is also, in the Pasuk in Yecheskel, calls the Beis HaMikdash the einayim of the world. So Ibazai, what you should do is, you should fix up the Beis HaMikdash. Now, partially what this means is that the Beis HaMikdash, we have to remember, was built about 330 years before by the Oilei Bavel, and it was built, it wasn't built as a, like Shlomo HaMelech built it, but it was built, as we had then explained, by not in such a grand eifin. And also, it was after 330 years of the different tzaras that the Eden had gone through, were going through, so, and different enemies that went into the Beis HaMikdash and pulled out the gold and the silver and their base was, so there was, the building wasn't looking so good. So he told Hurdis, make the Beis HaMikdash into something that is beautiful. Make it into something that was nice. So he, Hurdis decided, this was right up his alley, building an edifice that would be a beautiful building. This is something that was right up his line. He took together 10,000 workers, and he took in many years, but after these years, he put together this beautiful building. And the emes is, the Gemara in Bava Basra says about this building, that if a person didn't see Mishlei Roh, if it's the Beis HaMikdash, that Hurdis put up, so we never saw anything in his life. This was something that was much, much grander, much greater, more beautiful than anything that ever existed before. So this was the one thing that Hurdis did. Till today, when you go to the even to the Kaisel, when you go to the Kaisel Maharavi, so the stones that a person sees by the Kaisel Maharavi, you could still see what they call the Herodian stones, the stones that were built, that were put there by Hurdis. They're very distinct. The stones that were put up by Hurdis, they have like a boundary that goes around the stones. And it's very obvious which ones they are. Like an indentation that goes all around the stone. I guess this was like the mark that he wanted to leave. Agav, when you go to Mar Samach Pela, so you see there that the stones also are the same type of stones. And I once heard from somebody that there are those who believe that it was Hurdis that built the building over the Mar Samach Pela. Mar Samach Pela is underneath that huge building that's on top of it, and the building that's there has the signs of the type of a building that Hurdis put up, and there are therefore those who believe, Taka, that Hurdis put up this building. Maybe to get a little bit of an understanding in Bava ben Buta's Eitzah, when he told him that the Beis HaMikdash, he should build up the Beis HaMikdash and make the Beis HaMikdash beautiful. So perhaps this was what Bava ben Buta was saying, that once again he was worried about the covet of Klal Yisrael, and Kol Zman the Chachamim were alive, where he wasn't able before heard this went and killed out so many of the Chachamim. We don't know how many he killed out, but he obviously killed out many, many of the Chachamim. So the Kveid HaTorah and the Kveid of the Chachamim, so that was the Shtolz of Klal Yisrael. And if that was the Shtolz of Klal Yisrael, the fact that the Beis HaMikdash was in disarray, and it wasn't the most prominent building that was found in all of Eretz Yisrael, so it wasn't a major problem, because the most beautiful thing that we had in Klal Yisrael were the Chachamim, were the Tamidei Chachamim. But after Hurdis went and killed out the Chachamim, so he was afraid that this might affect the feeling of pride that Yidden living in Eretz Yisrael had. And he felt that it's now necessary, in order to keep up their shtolz from the Yidden living in Eretz Yisrael, that they needed a Beis HaMikdash, that Taka should be a beautiful building. They needed a Beis HaMikdash that should be something that they would be able to look at and feel a very big pride in this Beis HaMikdash. And therefore he advised Hurdis that Hurdis should put up this building. He should put up this Beis HaMikdash. Today they show you how exactly how it stood and how it was done. It's like a magnificent piece, and it took a tremendous amount of effort on, I don't know, Hurdis's part, or at least the people that did it for Hurdis, the people that he enslaved, so to say, in order that to put up this building. But once again, this is perhaps the one good thing, so to say, that we have out of Hurdis. The other thing that we could say is that at this point it became very, very clear, and all of the Eden saw this very clearly, that there isn't any more an official, so to say, leader of the Eden. The leaders of the Eden now had to be only by its Chacham, and they had to make it so that you couldn't have somebody that's going to lead Klal Yisrael that's going to be an official, an appointed official. This couldn't exist anymore. Now the officials, the ones who led Klal Yisrael, there wasn't even a real Nasi anymore, because you still had two yeshivas. And although there was a Nasi, Hillel was the Nasi, but things weren't in Gansin in his power, because he wasn't able to solidify the Hanhoga and the Halacha in Klal Yisrael. This first came much later in Yavne, but even in Hillel's time, as big of a kayach and as influential that Hillel was in his time, but he didn't have the kayach over against Klal Yisrael to be Kaveya the Halacha, because although he was the Nasi, but he didn't have that kind of a kayach, and it was a terrible situation. But on the other hand, this was the Meir Derech for the whole future of Klal Yisrael. And it became very clear that in the future there is no official that's going to be the leader of Klal Yisrael. It's the Chachamim, the Talmidei Chachamim, they are going to be the true Manhigim of Klal Yisrael. And the next time we have to go further, leave the Tkufa of Shammai and Hillel, and leave the Tkufa of Hurdis, and start the decline, so to say, to the Churban of the Beis HaMikdash.